Moncrief on News Talk.
Just like the way a film works, right? We see the world as a series of fast-moving images. However, there's a new study that reveals that people actually see these images at different rates per second. Joining me now to unpack all of this is Dr. Kevin Mitchell from the Institute of Neuroscience at Trinity College Dublin. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So can you give us some sort of an analogy or some sort of way of imagining this, of what you're trying to say?
Yeah, well, I guess we can start with the idea that actually different species see the world at different rates. So, for example, if you've ever tried to swat a fly.
Yes.
And the fly escapes pretty easily. That's because it sees your hand coming at a rate that's faster than you can adjust, right?
Okay, so it's seeing. It's not that it's it's not that it's physically faster. It's also processing in its brain what it's seeing faster than we can.
Yeah, well, it's both. In fact, and what we see, so a colleague of mine in Trinity, Andrew Jackson, had done a study that led up to the one that we're doing, which was looking across different species. And what he found was that the really small ones that move really fast have a very high visual frame rate.
Okay.
And the really slow ones, big ones, which don't need to move very fast, also don't need to spend the effort to see that much temporal resolution in the image that
so
they see.
So we're almost seeing things in slow motion.
Well, so we're seeing them in the speed that we need to for the kinds of things that we do.
Okay.
And species that move really fast have to be able to see the world really fast because otherwise they'd be blind when they were moving. So what's interesting is that different species have this kind of a set point at the frequency that they're sampling the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell this, for example, if you look at the lights in the studio here.
Yes.
They're flickering.
I know.
But we don't see it.
I do.
Do you?
Okay. Well, I'm autistic. So
okay, well,
I see a lot
that.
Of, I see flickering that other people don't see, and I hear noises that people don't hear.
That's really interesting. So you might be at the high end of the range. So typically those lights flicker at about 120 hertz, which means 120 per second. Most people, their average that they can see of a flicker is around 50 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you're saying a fly would be able to see that?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, though, is that within humans, the average is about 50. But what we didn't know before this study was how much variation there is. And that's what Clinton Harlem, who was a graduate student who worked on this project, aimed to look at. And so he sampled a large number of people and made a device where it's basically a flickering light where the person can control how fast it's flickering and then tell you when they see it go
okay.
from a steady light to a flicker. And the really, really interesting thing that came out was that there's a huge range, it's much bigger range across just general people that we tested than we expected. So it goes from about maybe, you know, as low as 20 hertz up to 70 hertz.
And so sometimes I saw this on TikTok where it's, you know, like there's a sound, you know, it's playing a frequency sound and
yeah.
it says, you know, press stop when you can't hear it anymore. And
yes.
we know that sometimes as we age, the frequencies we can hear go down and we know that dogs can hear higher. Is this something that changes with your age? Is it something you're set with? Can you train your eyes to see better?
Yeah, those are all great questions. And we're just at the start, right?
Okay.
So what we had to do with this study was just, first of all, show that it's a trait, that it's fairly stable. So what Clinton did was test the same people multiple times.
Okay,
and
so they're not having a good day.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that was really important to see, is this something, yeah, that's a trait that differs, you know, but stable within a person, but differs between person. And it looks like it is. And then there's all these other questions. Does it differ as we get older? There's some suggestion that it probably will go down as we age. You know, does it differ across the day, depending on how awake you are or whether you've had coffee or something like
mm-hmm.
that? Does it differ between males and females was something that we looked at. There was some prior work that had suggested that it was higher in males than in females, but we didn't see that. We saw a little difference in variability, but we don't really know what to make of that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the real sort of, you know, question that we're interested in then is whether that links to, for example, how fast somebody's reflexes
yeah,
are.
I was just going to ask, like, so what?
Yeah.
So what is the implication of this?
Exactly.
Why does it matter?
Right. And so the, you know, humans have an average sort of setting that's about 50 hertz because that's what allows us to get around in the world. But there may be some scenarios where having a really, really high temporal resolution is important. And we're thinking of like high speed sports.
Okay.
So baseball, cricket, hurling, especially maybe racing, driving, maybe some really, really high speed computer games as well,
mm-hmm.
where it may be the case that the people who are able to excel at those kinds of sports are innately, you know, have a high temporal resolution.
So if a slitter is coming at your face,
yeah,
and you have the ability to see faster,
yes,
you'll be able to protect your face.
Well, you'll be able to catch it, hopefully. Or,
okay, yeah, catch it and pass it on.
Exactly.
More than someone who sees more slowly.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same, it's the analogy with like a peregrine falcon that's moving at, you know, 90 miles an hour trying to track a rapidly moving mm-hmm. sparrow or something like that. It needs a really, really high temporal resolution to its vision.
But and does it also it need the ability to get that to, like, for its arm to move that fast,
well, that's
to catch the slitter.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no point having one without the other.
Yes.
In evolutionary terms.
Which now, I think is what I have. I can see the things, but I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's interesting in humans is whether those two things necessarily go together. And the other question then is the one you asked, could it be trained? Because there's sort of two possibilities. If we found that hurdlers had a really high frame rate, which is something we're working on right now, there's sort of two explanations. One is they're hurlers because they have a really high frame rate. The other is the opposite, right? They have a frame rate because they've been training it.
Yes.
You know, so it's like asking, well, is it like basketball where people who play basketball are tall? That's because they're selected for that.
Yes.
Or like weightlifting where, you know, weightlifters have huge muscles. That's because they lift weights.
But so, we know, I guess, that our eyes are so adaptable. Like, for example, I see you're wearing glasses. I also wear glasses. And at the moment, I just went to get my eyes tested because I was saying my glasses are not working as well as they used to. And they said, that's because you've just had a baby. So you're looking, like I have a 10-week-old, you're looking really close all the time because your baby is in your arms. So like, just give it a couple of months and it will adjust again. So
Well, first of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And our eyes adapt to all kinds of things. So they adapt to low light, for example. And what happens when the light is dimmed is that our temporal resolution window increases. So we basically have to sample more over a longer time to get good information about what's out in the world.
And like when you leave the lens of a camera open for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yes, the exposure time has to increase. It's a flexible kind of a dynamic system, but it also seems to have a different set point between individuals.
Have you been able to work out whether this means that people see more detail if they see in faster? Yeah.
So we're used to the idea of spatial resolution, right? If you say someone has 20/20 vision or 20/10 vision or whatever it is, and the reason, you know, you and I are both wearing glasses is because our spatial resolution is low without them. We're not so used to the idea of temporal resolution, but the idea would be the same, is that they see more information in an instant, right?
Okay.
Or over multiple instants, they get more detailed information, richer information about the successive time steps than something who has a longer frame rate where they have to average over a huge, you know, what would be multiple time steps for one person would be just one sample.
So what I'm imagining is, you know, when you're a child and you have those books that you flick and on each page there's a little picture and the picture moves a tiny bit, that someone who sees faster would be able to get more of those individual images and remember them, whereas someone who has slower would just be like, oh yeah, there was a boy and he moved at some point.
I think that's a great analogy. You can imagine if your flip book had 100 pages versus someone where their flip book has 200 pages, but they flip it at the same speed.
Yes.
Right. They'd be getting a richer, more detailed view of the more subtle changes over shorter time periods.
Yes, yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's what we think is going on.
So how long is left in the study and what does it look like? Are you, like, do you have the same people and what's their commitment to it?
Well, so the other colleagues on this study are Andrew Jackson, who's in zoology, and Redmond O'Connell, who's in neuroscience. What we're interested in now is going to ask, well, what's going on in the brains of these people that have high or low frame rates? Can we see, you know, some differences in the speed of neural processing, for example? How quickly does a signal come on that shows us that they perceived something visually? And that study's underway. And then the next element is to go to hurlers, baseballers, maybe e-gamers, and see if they actually have, you know, this, what we hypothesize is potentially a higher frame rate.
Yeah, because you see all those online games where it's like, you know, it'll count down from 5 and you have to try and get as close to 0.
Yes.
These people probably have a huge advantage when it comes to, you know, TV game shows, like fastest finger first.
Yeah, I mean, potentially, right? That's the hypothesis, but we need to test it.
So if, this is my last question now. So if, say in the study where there was the flickering candle and you were asked, how many times did it flicker? And someone says, it didn't flicker at all. And someone else says, I saw it flicker 6 times. The person who didn't see it flicker at all, like, it didn't flicker at all. That's their reality.
Yes.
So does this completely change someone's, like, is your ability to see equal to your ability to perceive equal to your reality?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit just the philosophical nail on the head there, right? Our experience of the world, we tend to kind of naively think that everyone is experiencing the world that's out there as it is. But in fact, what we're experiencing is our inferences mm-hmm. about what's out in the world. We have a kind of an inner constructed subjective experience. It must be pretty good because we all get around in the world, right? So we're not just making it up. We're not hallucinating. But we are constructing that and with the limits of our sensory equipment. And so if your camera captures half the images that mine does, then you will absolutely have a different kind of subjective inner perceptual mm-hmm. world.
Yeah. I find that all the time where I say, like, you know, the lights in the studio are flashing and someone says, no, they're not.
Yeah. well, they are for you.
yeah, which is my reality. Yeah. Jackie Convoy, that was our last guest. Dr. Kevin Mitchell, Institute of Neurosciences at Trinity College Dublin. Thank you so much. We'll definitely have you back in again once the study is further underway and to hear what you've come up with, because it has huge implications, I guess, for reality and everything. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.